My little black heart breaks apart with your big mouth. And I'm sick of my sickness. Don't touch me, you'll get this.
This is Mary Jane, and I'm at the House of Blues in San Diego with Unwritten Law.
Hi, I'm Scott. I play the singer for Unwritten Law, and I'm here with Mary Jane.
You can't save me. You can't change me.
Start things off first with a fan question. Michael wrote in and wanted to know when you guys are going to record a new album.
We're slated to record February on a subsidiary of Suburban Noise Records.
In the past, you guys have worked with a lot of record labels. Is that something you want to continue in the future, moving through labels, or would you like to go independent?
Well, the last record that we put out was independent. The Hit List was an independent release with a major distribution. We found a real home now at Suburban Noise again, and we plan on staying there for a while. There's old friends of ours, like 15 deep, never gotten a bed with them until now, and so everyone feels really comfortable, everyone's really psyched about the project, so it's our old friend Kevin Singer's company. He's making stuff happen for us, so really stoked to move over there and put it together there. So February is when they got us slated for the studio.
With the Hit List, what made you guys want to re-record some old singles?
The reason why we want to put that out is because we'd had 5 top 20 singles and, several top 40 singles, but a lot of singles, and a lot of people didn't put the band to the song. We really wanted to just kind of connect the dots for people who knew the song but didn't know the band, and so we wanted to put out the Hit List. The reason why we re-recorded them is because we wanted to put a compilation out, like this, but with all the labels that we had been on, we couldn't really, contractually, between all the different labels, they wouldn't relinquish the songs. But we found loopholes in almost all the recording agreements except for Interscope, where we could re-record all the songs. Or actually Atlantic. Atlantic was the only one that we couldn't re-record. They actually caught us on that one. So Interscope, Sony, and everything else had loopholes in it that we could re-record. They only owned the masters of the actual songs. They didn't own the songs, so we re-recorded those. Took the actual ones from the Atlantic release, Here's the Morning, and put those directly on there, and then re-recorded 2 new ones and re-recorded all the old ones.
So like you said, you guys have had a lot of chart toppers, so you're kind of obligated to play those at shows for the fans. How do you play the same songs every night without going mad?
You know what? It's kind of weird. I think that at a certain point, like you kind of cross that gap. It's not really like you're playing the same song over and over and over again. I think that when you're doing like TV appearances and in stores and stuff like that, where you only get 3 songs to play and they want to hear the singles, that kind of gets, to be a bum out. But when you're playing a live show, like, just as, the band, I think I can speak for all of us, we all, kind of get off as much as the kids do hearing those songs. So it's like we're playing it for the first time, or, I hope not, I don't sound cliche by saying that, but, we really truly enjoy playing music, and we're not ashamed of our songs, so we're stoked to be playing those songs for everybody.
The shows you guys put on are really intense and energetic. The last time I saw you play live, I actually passed out in the crowd because it was so intense. So how do you guys react to your fans going so crazy? Do you wish you were in the audience?
No, I like where I'm at. But sincerely, we feed off the crowd's energy. So if we're playing a show and everyone's just kind of moving, we'll just kind of have a moving show. If we have a show and everyone's going off, we'll go way off. And it kind of goes, it's a double-edged sword, too, because if we're playing a crowd that's dead, I think we all try to push it even harder to try to get the kids turned around in a place maybe we've never been, like Europe, or, when we go there for the first time, or when we've been there for the first time, it's like kids haven't been there, so we just push harder and harder. Our band is really an energetic band, and our crowds are pretty energetic as well, so I just think it's more or less a mutual feedback of energy between us and the kids, for sure.
Okay, well, because Unwritten Law has been around for so long, do you guys find it hard to keep up the enthusiasm when you're writing or performing?
You know what? This band really, I can say that we generally don't. I think that we're all stoked. It's like, for real, our band's kind of weird and kooky. We're like the Goonies or something. Like, we really, love playing, and so it's not like it's hard to keep up that kind of momentum. It's like when we get out there, we want to kill it, and we want to give these people what they came to see, so it's... It really isn't even about us and what we're trying to do. It's about connecting the the dots and the energy between us and the fans, so everything is one moving unit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I've got another fan question for you. Dylan wants to know, will you ever tour Australia with your good friends Grinspoon? A lot of people here would kill for that combination.
We love Grinspoon. We'd love to tour with them. The thing is that when we come down there, we're both headliners. And so the bill would have to be their festival bill. Or, you know, it's kind of hard to put both of our bands into a club. Yeah, I'd like nothing more than to tour Australia with Grinspoon. We took Grinspoon to America, I think it was 96-ish, to open up for us. And it, seriously, it was one of my favorite tours of all, because I love the boys. I love Phil. He's like one of my close friends. And yeah, I'd like nothing more to play shows with them. But it's really hard to do an actual club tour of Australia with two headlining bands. And I just think the ticket price would be too much for kids. And, you know, someone might die. So yeah, I kind of think that's kind of where it's at. But yeah, we'd love to do that. So, but I'm not sure if it's going to happen.
Well, when you guys are writing songs, is there a particular topic that you're driven towards?
For me personally, I write the music first, and the music kind of tells me what the song's going to be about. So it depends on the mood of the chord progression or the music that I'm playing or writing. From the mood of the song, I will kind of use my input, my personal life input, into putting the lyrics to the music and where that goes. But everything does come from a place that I've actually witnessed or been a part of personally.
Father, I've sinned over and over and over and over again. Sorry, my friends, I'm such a mess. I'm doing the best I can. She says, where you going, where you been? She says, I don't want you hanging out with them. She leaves like she's never coming back again. On and on, it goes on and on.
Participated in a film called Numb.
Yeah.
How did you get involved in that project?
Well, my ex-girlfriend is Amy Allen. She was put up for the for one of the lead roles in it, and she had suggested that I try out for one of the characters too. I went out and tried out for one of the characters, Eric, her boyfriend, and I got the part. And so that's kind of how that went down. And so it was pretty funny because the movie kind of played out how our relationship played out, and so there wasn't a lot of acting going on. It was kind of like we were like kind of outwardly, you know, acting out our own relationship. So that's kind of how that went down.
Mm-hmm. Artistically, how does acting differ from being on stage performing your music?
You know, I haven't done a lot of acting aside from, you know, the 12 or 14 videos we've made, and I think I had a little part in Coyote Ugly, but you know, with Numb, it was actually a real part, real role, real script, and I had to get into it. But once again, it wasn't far fetched from real life basis. But how does it differ? You know, I mean, I think when I perform live on a stage, I'm actually a certain character to a certain extent. It's just a kind of more or less myself amplified. You know what I'm saying? In Numb, I was a recovering drug addict. So it's like you kind of got to put yourself into whatever the role calls for. So it may not necessarily be yourself, whereas being on stage, it is just an amplification of your true identity.
Mm-hmm. Well, also in that film, Romac from Romac and the Space Pirates is in that, and you guys played a show with them, and I'm just wondering what you think of their music. Are you a fan of them?
You know, I'm a fan of Romac, and I love the boys, and we actually put them on our show because we had met on set of Numb. And yeah, we just wanted to do a show with him because, I mean, he's crazy, and the kids are really, really cool. And we just actually do really like their music. I think they're a fun band and, you know, really cool people. So it was fun playing shows with those guys.
Okay. So Unwritten Law started out as a punk band, and the last couple of albums, you guys have kind of evolved your sound. Mm-hmm. Is there something really different you'd like to work with in the future?
I think we've kept the spirit of punk in us throughout the course of all of our records. I just think that as we grow older as fans of music, and as, I mean, first and foremost, we're songwriters. I'm a songwriter. I think that once I try to appease a certain genre or a certain thing, that's right when I'll fail. I think that the way I try to write is, I know if I write a song and I make it so I can play it to my friends and my family and not be embarrassed, then that's a good song. I know it's going to have the energy and what I need to have, and I can tell when my friends and family are like, oh, it's cool, you know, but it's not that good. No, it's not going to be a good song. I think in the future that we want to just continue down the path and write music that is at least evolutionary in our band, and make another step forward into creating something new that's fun to listen to. I mean, I think music is truly like an escape from reality, almost like a movie is. And so I really try to make things as fun as they can be, no matter what it may be. I think that's, music has definitely taken a serious turn, and I'm not willing to make things all that serious. I want to make fun music, hence Should Have Known Better and, you know, Oblivion. I want to make things that are fun and that take you away.
So I always end my interviews with the same three questions, so I'm just going to ask you these. Do you have any slang terms that you overuse?
Slang terms? Yeah, I say ish too much. Like if someone asks you, was she hot? And you go, ish. She's hot-ish. That's pretty much the slang term I use a lot. Yeah, you guys can take that one home.
Okay, what's your drink of choice?
Right now, it's a kettle and soda with a splash of cranberry and a lime. It's kind of like vitamin water, but different. It's ish. It's like vitamin water-ish.
And how do you feel about eyeliner?
Eyeliner, guy liner. And, yeah, you know what? Depends on how many kettle and sodas and the splash of cranberries I have. I like it, you know? Makes my eyes pop. But I'm wearing far less makeup these days, so I don't know. It's a teacher's own. That's the way I feel, for sure.
Okay. Is there anything you'd like to say to fans listening to close this out?
Yeah, thanks for listening, and we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you guys. So, yeah, keep your chin up. We'll be coming back soon.
You're feeling blue. I think you bit off more than you could chew, and now it's time to make a choice, and all I wanna hear is your so far.